Chapter 16. Helotyne, at the outskirts of Canticus. A second dawn lit the sky over Canticus as the heavy guns of the Cadian 81st erupted with fire and thunder. Colonel Redgage commenced the heavy bombardment from the cupola of his command vehicle. The Earthshakers spoke first, the remnants of 8th Squadron releasing several tons of heavy munitions into the uncharted northern district of Canticus. They lived up to their name. Redgage felt the micro-tremors all the way back to his Chimera. The intention was to deliver a punitive barrage into the heart of the enemy stronghold, and then assault in force, which was problematic as that stronghold tended to move. No sighting had yet been made of the enemy commander, though what scant intelligence the Imperials did have suggested it was a high-ranking traitor Space Marine officer. Three other battle groups, supported by elements from the Ecclesiarchy, launched simultaneous attacks in an effort to bring the heretics to open battle and destroy them. Dust still clearing from the initial punitive barrage, Redgage ordered a second salvo. Held at the back of the line with the basilisks that began the shelling, griffins and bombards launched ordnance. Three troops of siege engines fired in unison, the weak dawn light briefly obscured as a heavy rain of shells soared overhead. The violence of the combined mortar launch rocked the ground, shaking Redgage's Chimera, but he was too busy watching the parabola of their lethal payloads through his magnoculars to notice. The strike was good. A long chain of explosions spewed earth and rock skyward some 3 kilometers away. In the short aftermath, several taller buildings, their previous form and function long since eradicated, collapsed. They tumbled slowly like felled trees, releasing huge clouds of dust and grit when they hit the ground. Redgage slipped one cup of his ear defenders over his helmet and turned to the war machine. Venerable Korad remained still and faced forwards, his squads of heavies likewise. The salamanders wore scorch marks on their armor like it was war paint. Their armor was patched in places too, evidence of the hard graft of their armorers trying to maintain a decent level of combat efficacy. The retreat had hurt them, and not just physically. The Dreadnought had refused Xantho's aid after that, preferring Redgage's armored company instead. This was the first time they had met, officer to officer, one of flesh and blood, the other a walking battle engine. 2 other war machines stood behind him, but were subservient to this ancient warrior. Translation issues were to be expected. Redgage guessed the meaning behind Korad's silence.
"Hit them again,"
he voxed to his crews, turning back towards the city as he put the sound-deadening cup back in place. First the basilisks, then the heavy mortars. Plumes of earth rocketed into the air again. Fires broke out in some quarters. More buildings buckled under the weight of the Imperial hammer of war. Redgage observed everything through the magnoculars. Finally, the backwash of heat and seismic disturbance hit him from the initial bombardment, tickling his moustache and inducing a cough with all the displaced dust. Even at a distance, the destructive fury of the heavy tanks was impressive, but the Imperials had no way of knowing if it was also being effective. Their answer came after the 3rd round of shelling. A cacophony of shrieking presaged a flock of Helldrakes darting from some unseen silo and spreading their wings as soon as they had pulled clear of their hidden nest. Behind the colonel and overhead, a flight of storm talons and the patched-up remnants of his own fleet of vulture gunships roared across the sky to intercept. Engines burning, bleeding cloud contrails and heat vapor, they cut through the air like daggers. The approaching dawn light shone brightly against their wingtips and angular nose cones. It was, briefly, a magnificent sight.
"Throne protect you, lads," muttered the colonel, stroking the aquila pendant he wore around his neck.
Punisher Gatling cannons opened up in the lead vultures, stitching the air with darting flashes of tracer fire. One of the Helldrakes took a burst across its left wing. A second burst raked its fuselage, and it dipped, trailing fire and something reminiscent of blood and oil, but far less earthly. Rocket expulsion bloomed in vapor clouds under the wings of the second wave of vultures as the air was choked with missiles. An ululating screech tore from a Helldrake as it tried to pull away from the salvo. Three hunter killers impacted against its open span, tearing off one wing and blowing it out of the sky. Secondary explosions erupted moments later as a third monster went down, its neck streaming flames and gore. Then the Chaos Flyers were amongst them, and the killing began in earnest. Redgage saw a vulture ripped in two as it was seized in iron claws. A second went down burning after it was enveloped in demon fire. Piloted by space marines, the Storm Talons were faring a little better, their assault cannons racking up an impressive tally of enemy kills, but the sky was still hotly contested.
"Hydras, move up! Firing solutions at these coordinates!" barked Redgage,
conveying the data from his spotter aboard the Chimera to all flak tank commanders. On the right flank, two troops of anti-aircraft platforms rolled into position on grimy tracks. A few seconds later, their autocannons were chugging high-caliber rounds into the dogfight above. The artillery quads on each tank thumped back and forth alternatively like pistons, spitting out an incredible rate of shells. Two more enemy flyers were torn apart, dismantled by chasing autocannon fire. Retaliation was swift. A Helldrake broke off from the interception sweep, diving in low to unleash its nose-mounted cannon. Hell-hot rounds whined in like hail and sawed one of the Hydras in half. A stray round hit the fuel tanks and the whole engine went up in a fiery plume. Exploding shrapnel shredded the exposed crew of the tank alongside it, but mercifully, its armor prevented a chain of destruction. Turrets swiveling, the other Hydras tried to track the monster amongst them, but it was flying too close and too low. Strapping into the Chimera's pintle mount, Redgage tried to distract it with a burst of heavy stubber. He needed to keep it away from the siege tanks. Solid shot chased the monster through the air before peppering its armored hide. Redgage roared down the vox as the Helldrake came for him.
"Vulture Six, peel back and engage!"
And in that moment, the battle shrank to just he and it, witnessed down the myopic iron sights of a heavy stubber. Impervious to his cannon, Redgage had just made it angry. Vulture Six went down, its pilot shouting in the colonel's ear until his screams were eclipsed by static. The rest of the air group were already engaged. A low dive from the Helldrake became a strafing run.
"In the Emperor's grace, I trust," said Redgage, his fingers clenched on the heavy stubber's triggers. Brass casings cascaded down at his feet. Sparks cracked across the Helldrake's armored face. "Let it be a light in dark places."
Balefire ignited within the monster, its eyes already aflame, mouth trailing smoke.
"Let it be my shield," whispered Redgage, and began to shut his eyes.
A flare of actinic energy slammed into its neck, wrenching it off course. The balefire went wild, streaming wide and burning up the ground. Korad brought the Helldrake down with a second burst, coring a hole right through its fuselage with his plasma cannon. It limped on in defiance of the mortal injury before crashing a half kilometer away towards the western district of the city. Still a little shaken, Redgage nodded his thanks, but got nothing from the dreadnought who had already turned away. Though the Emperor's angels had begun as men in the broader sense, they were far removed from that biological paradigm after their genhanced apotheosis. Redgage admired them, was in awe of their prowess and fortitude, but found he could not understand or relate to them. And allegedly, the salamanders were the most human of all the chapter Adeptus Astartes. Some of the men were afraid of them. None had admitted as much, but Redgage saw it in their eyes as they looked on the green-armored monsters. Still, they fought like black-skinned devils, and that was good enough for the Cadian colonel. The skies were clearing over war-torn Canticus at last. After receiving enough punishment, the Chaos Flyers had broken off, and the wings of Storm Talons and Vultures were ordered back. Several did not make the recall.
"A good fight," murmured Korad, surveying the devastation through his sensors. With the grind of leg pistons, the dreadnought faced the colonel. "You honor them."
Redgage wasn't sure that he was the one being addressed at first. "My lord?" Korad's impassive vision slit regarded him. For Redgage, it was like staring back into an unfeeling abyss.
"You stood willing to sacrifice your life. You honor them," Korad repeated.
Was the dreadnought giving him praise? Redgage was unfamiliar with any Adeptus Astartes offering praise to lowly men, especially a warrior as ancient as Korad.
"I am the one who is honored," said Redgage, mustering enough resolve to converse with the massive war machine.
Even sat up in his cupola, the dreadnought stood eye to eye with the colonel.
"By their bravery, I vouch for every one of these men, tankers and flyers both. I see now why the metal of Cadia is mentioned in such high regard," said Korad. "Your courage and magnanimity do you credit, Colonel. Refer to me as brother from now on. You are my warrior equal, not my serf."
Redgage had no reply, genuinely aghast and humbled. He did not need one. Korad had already turned away to address the battle group.
"Skies are ours,"
he uttered thunderously through his vox emitters.
"Advance into the city."
With ground-quaking purpose, the dreadnought led his squads out. It was a half-kilometer march to the next bombardment point, and from there into Canticus proper. Redgage consulted his tactical slate, fighting down the swell of pride in his breast at the dreadnought's words. Artillery was staying behind at the first line. Two troops of demolishers and a pair of thunderers moved forward with his chimera. Once they hit beyond Canticus's outer borders, an infantry battalion from the Adepta Sororitas that was coming up from the blockaded eastern road would link up with them. Just before they rolled out, Redgage ducked his head back inside the tank.
"Any word from the Ecclesiarchy?"
he asked his comms operator.
"Nothing yet, sir."
Redgage took another look at the slate. In order to make an incursion into Canticus, they needed that infantry support. At distance, his tanks were lethal. They had already turned much of the outer reaches into rubble and debris, but at close range, in that warren of streets, they would be vulnerable. Best defense against infantry was infantry. And Redgage had heard the battle sisters excelled in that role. He got back on the vox to his commanders.
We are heading into the belly of the beast, officers, he announced with full-blooded conviction. Keep a tight formation. Roll out!
Subtle vibrations from the turbofans trembled the Thunderhawk's interior, but it was background noise to those seated within. Amber strip lighting just below the ceiling glowed but shed little light in the gloomy hold. Despite the ostensible calm, the mood in the gunship bordered on tense. The Wyverns of Fourth Company were anxious. One of their own lay dead. A tax in enemy lives was demanded in payment. Valin had been with Sorad when he died, and so had the warrior sitting across from him. Not since their foray into the Canticus ruins had the two of them spoken. Kaidak kept his feelings guarded, as if, like Valin, he did not know what to make of the reliquary or its meaning to the enemy or the Ecclesiarchy. Voicing concern prior to deployment would serve no useful purpose, so Valin had kept quiet. His eyes met Kaidak's, trying to read him, but saw nothing but a granite wall. In the end, it was Valin who looked away. His averted gaze arrived at another difficult sight. Sorad's empty harness was like an open wound. Zerus sat alongside the vacant spot at the end of the row, muttering to himself, or perhaps it was with his slain brother that he exchanged conversation. Except for Zerus, a solemn mood persisted, the others preoccupied with grim thoughts. Decius leaned his head against the hull, eyes closed in meditation. Vosha and Ilus bowed their heads, murmuring final oaths of moment. Arok filled his mind with routine, mechanically thumbing brass-shelled mass reactives into spare clips, oiling and sharpening the teeth of his chain blade. Naeb was quiet. Sepelius had declared him combat-ready, but Valin suspected his injury was paining him.
Silence suits you, brother.
Naeb returned a weak smile.
I do not plan on making it habit.
A pity. You would make more friends that way.
I need none. I have one, a long-suffering ally.
Valin laughed, letting his relief show at Naeb's good humour.
Indeed I am.
For a moment, Naeb grew serious.
I meant Decius, brother.
He held Valin's gaze a moment longer, before laughing loudly.
Decius's eyes remained closed, but he said,
If you are disparaging me, Naeb, I will see you in the cages once battle is done.
I think you upset him, said Valin,
thumbing in the burly Themian's direction, one eyebrow raised. His eye fell on Iaptus, and he felt their levity bleed away before the sergeant's intense stare. Iaptus rarely smiled, seeing little value in humour. He was a stark, serious man, but a warrior they all aspired to emulate. Mastery of Thunderhammer and Storm Shield in combat was not easy. Harder still was wielding them proficiently whilst aloft on the screaming fire jets of a jump pack. Iaptus had maglocked his shield to a weapons rack inside the hold, but his Thunderhammer was to hand, sitting across his lap. His stare was penetrating, searching, as if he knew everything Valin and Naeb were thinking, as if every fault and flaw were laid bare to him. He nodded to give them reassurance. His one intention for them all was victory and retribution for a brother lost.
Blood for blood, brothers,
he said aloud, looking directly at Valin.
We go to avenge Sorad.
9 salamanders thumped their fists against their breastplates. So it was said, so it would be done. Iaptus had just given them his word, and that was more unbreakable than his storm shield. The hold's vox crackled, admitting the voice of Brother Orcus.
Prepare for imminent disembarkation, brothers, said the pilot.
A lumen glowing next to the Thunderhawk's rear access ramp changed from amber to green.
Gusting pressure release filled the area around the point of egress with pneumatic gas before a crack appeared, delineating the ramp, and began to let in daylight.
"Helmets on," said Iaptus, disengaging his restraint harness so he could stand.
The crack of daylight became a yawning chasm as the ramp slowly unfurled. Iaptus was framed in the light, his armor rimmed in a rising umber dawn. He shouldered his storm shield, thunderhammer gripped in his right hand.
"Let this be a day for vengeance!"
he shouted over the wind buffeting inside the hold. The ramp distended fully, 8 armored silhouettes standing behind Iaptus, who waited patiently for their target to present itself in the conflict below. A vast bridge, wide enough to accommodate entire armies, stretched below. Well fortified, its arches and buttresses were thronged with razor wire. Forked tank traps, huge crosses of barbed and rusted metal, littered the roadway. Sandbagged gun emplacements, sniper nests, minefields, and barricades, fashioned from the burned wrecks of freight loaders and ground cars, turned Salvation Bridge from a major artery into the city into a death trap. Squad Iaptus were about to dive right into it, gladly. Orcus brought the gunship in low. Firefights on the ground were keeping most of the insurgent heretics busy, so they attracted little in the way of flak. Even so, the hull shook with close impacts, and the smoke from explosions swept in through the open hatch.
"Confirmed visual on Xantho's linebreakers," Iaptus voxed.
Orcus did not reply, preoccupied with keeping them aloft, but the turbofans burned harder in response, and Iaptus saw the drop point through the blur of smoke and fire swilling across the hatch. 4 predators, armored up with dozer blades, were trying to push through the wreckage. Xantho rode up in the cupola of the one in the middle, Annihilator class, preferred to his Redeemer. After the grubby fight in the Canticus ruins, the commander had ordered the land raiders kept in reserve. It was the knockout blow and the cleansing fire that would rid them of the enemy once they had brought them to battle. Predators were lighter, more maneuverable, and equipped with dozer blades, they made shoveling through the debris look easy. As well as his own, Xantho led 4 other similar Destructor-class battle tanks and 3 siege-breaking Vindicators. This was the armored fist that would punch through the heretic defenses, reach in, and crush its throat. The Wyverns just had to help breach the gate. It was code for the mass of wreckage blocking the bridge. Its opening was their primary mission and would be effected by incendiaries, melter charges. But there was work to do beforehand. Cleanse and purge were the secondary missions. Heretic infantry, armed with all manner of improvised bombs, explosives, and even crude rocket tubes, colonized the debris below. Before Xantho's tanks could properly advance, they needed excising. Squad Iaptus was the ideal scalpel for such an operation. Iaptus smacked the flat of his thunderhammer against his shield, sending a minor charge through both. Heat vapor was already eking from the exhaust vents of his jump pack as he sank to a crouching position from which to launch.
"On my mark," he said. "Now fly!"
and leapt from the hold. Valin was third out behind Zerus, body angled down like a spear and accelerating fast. Wind shear hit him like a mailed fist, and he corrected with small bursts from his turbine engines. 9 armored forms knifed through clouds of smoke and rising ash, their eyes ablaze. Iaptus drew them into a wedge, himself as the spear tip.
"Give them tooth and claw," said the sergeant. "Show them how drakes fight and kill."
Varlin clenched his teeth as his combat reflexes began to kick in, but felt his body shaking as the rapid descent hammered his armor systems. A counter in his left lens cycled down the meters as he hit terminal velocity. Smudged shapes began to resolve into fighters clad in rags and crude armor. Detail increased. Some of the fighters were shouting, gesturing wildly at the sky and aiming their weapons. An explosion blossomed on the right, but Naib plowed through unharmed. Whining, solid rounds were thickening the air, pranging armor plate. Varlin felt a lucky shot smack his pauldron and ricochet.
"Eye to eye, brother!"
Naib's voice came over Varlin's personal vox feed. He was laughing all the way down. Varlin could not prevent a feral smile. They were close. Distance diminished as the crater-strewn roadway rushed up to meet them, and Iaptus angled his body so he went down feet first.
"Ready to engage,"
he uttered over the vox, taking a slew of hits against his storm shield. 8 affirmatives responded in near-perfect unison as Squad Iaptus mirrored its sergeant. Varlin could not suppress a snarl as he gunned the engines of his jump pack, violently arresting his ascent on twin cones of fire. A conflagration spread out below, cooking the drop zone and everything in it in successive waves of flame. Flesh and rockcrete blistered equally, and Squad Iaptus landed amidst a score of blackened corpses. Iaptus touched down at the epicenter of a ring of fire, cracks webbing the rockcrete at the impact point, his warriors radiating out from it. He launched again, seconds later, a small burst that took him just beyond the scorched perimeter of the drop zone and into a warren of burned-out maglev carriages. Heretics infested it like lice. Armored in a mismatch of heavy carapace, flak, and improvised plate metal ripped from various transports, the enemy had neither cohesion nor tactics. Men, their faces daubed in crude violet tattoos, threw themselves down on the salamanders. Their minds were lost, for no sane man would commit to such a suicidal charge. The killing was intense, but no more than a conditioned reflex. Varlin's flamer was still mag-locked to his jump pack as he favored his sidearm and gladius for close quarters. An elbow strike broke an arm, a left swing carved open a clavicle, the return swing took a head. Another 3 seconds passed, and the same rote repeated. 2 bolt rounds from Naib accounted for a team attempting to set up a heavy cannon at the end of a corridor bracketed by a pair of carriages. More deranged heretics scurried from the carriage's shattered windows. Decius gave them a bloody welcome. Naturally splitting into their combat squads, Zerus went with Iaptus on the opposite side of the makeshift enemy barricades. He cored the plate shield of a tripod-mounted autocannon that was being set up on a carriage roof. The plasma bolt burned through metal, skin, and bone. Arok and Vosha raced on ahead, gaining a little loft from their jump packs before hitting 2 groups of dirty-looking soldiers that had finally scattered from the salamanders' irresistible onslaught. A thick knot of warriors, armed with various solid-shot weapons and blades, tried to bull-rush Decius down a flanking avenue. The hulking salamander launched into them, breaking the pack before laying about them with chain blade and bolt pistol. Varlin was right on his heels, Naib just behind him, when he saw a second mob piling over a barricade on the opposite side.
"Douse them, brother," said Naib through his mouth grill. "I'll reinforce, Brother Decius."
Varlin nodded and came to a halt so he could level his flamer. Promethean fire bathed the onrushing horde, rendering them down to charred and steaming bone. Varlin moved on.
"Brothers," Iaptus's voice came over the vox feed, "cleanse this nest, then break for high ground."
The secondary objective was all but achieved. Now for the primary, the opening of the gate. Decius and Naib finished the first mob just as the last of the heretic dregs were thinning out. More were positioned further down the bridge, but were bedded in and would need digging out. Decius voiced their collective frustration.
We're wasting our time with this rabble. Where are the real warriors?
They are here, Decius, said Naib. They're just afraid to fight you, brother.
Laughter echoed loudly across Salvation Bridge, incongruous when heard over the carnage. Varlin was scouring the vehicular warren and barely noticed.
Where is Kaiduk?
Naib scowled. Probably waging a one-man war, as always.
In the fierce melee, Varlin had lost sight of the Themian, but found him again in his peripheral vision, boosting to the roof of a flamed freight loader.
I see him.
A quick burst from his jump pack put Varlin on the same level. He heard his two brothers land heavily behind him. Kaiduk was gutting a half-armored heretic with his chain blade. Tech Marines had tried to repair it, but the weapon was only partially functional, and it made a grisly, flesh-chewed mess of the mortal. Kaiduk appeared to relish the gory baptism, and upon seeing his brothers, waved them on.
He's mad, said Naib. Have you never seen an angry Themian, brother? Asked Decius.
Every time you grace me with your brave countenance, brother.
Varlin barely heard them. For the first time since the drop, he had a decent view above the swamp of wreckage of Salvation Bridge as it stretched away into the middle distance. At the far end, Xantho's linebreakers were pushing against the deluge of rubble and debris trammeling their route across the roadway. Pockets of heretics dotted these ruins and barricades like cancerous growths. Unlike the chaff Squad Iaptus had just destroyed, these warriors were not only dug in, they were more disciplined. Only fire would burn them out. Likely they were military trained, possibly comprising a large number of native former Imperials and even some Cadians. Redgage, if he had been present, would likely have disputed that, but the evidence of Varlin's eyes suggested the contrary.
988 meters, said Decius, gauging the distance from their current position to the slow-moving line breakers through his helmet's auto-sensors.
Then let us run the gauntlet, replied Naib, with a hint of teeth bared.
Battle was an unequaled panacea, it seemed, for the salamander's injury did not look to trouble him now.
Lead on as earned, brother, said Varlin with wry amusement, or we'll miss the war.
Naib gestured to the mounds of corpses they were leaving behind.
What do you call this, brother?
Destruction.
Iaptus, Zerus, and the rest of the squad, barring Kaiduk, were already advancing, bounding across the sundered vehicle wrecks on pillars of flame. Two massive stone arches loomed ahead and above them. The veteran sergeant's voice came over the vox feed.
Those arches are crawling with heretics. Gut them. Burn everything. I've marked your targets on retinal displays.
The link cut off. Kaiduk abruptly joined them on the freight loader's roof. He was bloodied, but every drop of it was an enemy's.
Stay in formation, brother, snapped Varlin, stomping over to confront him. You risk more than yourself by giving in to these reckless urges.
Kaiduk looked about to bite back, but Decius's looming presence seemed to dissuade him. He gave a brief nod of contrition instead.
Far archway is ours, he said unnecessarily.
Everyone had the same view through their lens display, the farthest structure outlined in mission-critical red. Iaptus and the other half of the Wyverns were taking the first arch already.
On your order, brother,
invited Varlin, giving a last warning glance to Kaiduk. Something volatile ran through the Themian's veins, hotter than the blood of Mount Deathfire. The truth behind it was hidden in whatever Kaidak had seen in those flames at Sorad's burning, but there was no time to address that now. Naib slammed a fist against his breastplate in salute.
Advance on my lead! We cleanse the nest of vermin, then move on to the barricade. We'll make that breach, said Naib, feeding power to his turbine engines, and open the way for Xantho's line breakers.